Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Welcome back to another week of the internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. I'm your host Greg, and this is Wheeler Dealer Radio. And just like we said last week, nothing's getting us down. We lost to Manchester City, but we don't care because we followed that up with a win against Brighton, and we have the whole original gang back to talk about it tonight. So let's jump right in. Leading us off, we have my sidekick, Ben Daniels. Ben, how bothered were you by the loss against City this weekend?
I was only bothered that we only lost 1-0. I mean, you could just see how fucking petty and frustrated they were. I just wish worse things had happened because none of it mattered.
It was pretty great. Next up, we have a man with an appointment with the airport. It's Brian Ashlock. Brian, how angry did the loss against City make you?
I'm in the same boat as Ben. I was just really annoyed that it wasn't 10-0 and that Troy Parrott didn't get to start and everything. it could have been worse, I guess. But
we really
sure
should
how.
Have started our under-18s. We really missed the trick there. And finally, we have noted internet number wizard coming back to us from the double pivot. It's Michael Cayley. Michael, welcome back. How bothered were you by the City loss this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, it would have been awful if it hadn't been for the fact that Juan Foyth is the best fullback Spurs have. So that made me happy.
You know, I think
that is a insult to the memory of Danny Rose, and how dare you?
Yeah, second best right back, whatever.
So let's talk about this game. And I think when we talk about this Manchester City game, which, in case any of our listeners haven't been paying attention, was a 1-0 loss in Manchester. The thing that you really have to remember about this game is it doesn't matter because Tottenham just beat Manchester City to make the semifinals of the Champions League. And in case there's any City fans listening to this, we beat them when VAR, took back their game-winning goal in the 92nd minute, and that was pretty funny. So, yeah, this game didn't matter. I was expecting us to get thrashed, but, Michael, we actually played pretty well, right?
Yeah. I mean,
all things considered.
I would say there was sort of a break here, which is the first like 50, 60 minutes were not that far from even. And we had a number of fast breaks that their center backs, I thought, a company at Laporte played great against us.
Well, I'm glad this is the game they chose to play great against us in.
Exactly.
Because they were awful in the Champions League.
That was delightful.
Remember when Laporte passed it directly to Son? 60 minutes. What happened at 60 minutes?
Fernandinho came in at 50, 60 minutes, and it was a forced sub, I think, but it ended up just our players, I think, got exhausted, but also they had a proper DM in there to stop us, and our counters just didn't exist anymore after that. The game was pretty much over.
I mean, who cares?
Yeah.
It's really funny, but I gotta say, I think we've all talked about this on the podcast before, but this might be Pochettino's most impressive coaching job, and I think this game was another example of it. I mean, Ben, did this performance really surprise you in the way it surprised me?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, we joked we'd been happy with a 10-0 loss, but, I wasn't half expecting a 10, you know, that we would lose very badly. We were very injury hurt. We had to do a lot of rotation because we have so many injuries. And, you know, I expected Man City to kind of take their frustrations out on us and whip the shit out of us. You know, we've had Ben Davis and Juan Foyth at wingbacks, which is not anyone's idea or wouldn't have been anyone's idea of a good time going into this match. You know, Lucas and Son up top. Dele was back in midfield. Dyer was back in midfield. You know, they're good players, but we haven't seen a lot of them. And, you know, who knows what they're capable of. And, yeah, it should have been a thrashing. But luckily for us, Man City, I don't know if they just didn't care or what, but they did not know how to defend Lucas and Son in open space, and they had a hell of a time with it. And, you know, it would not have been unreasonable to go into halftime at least even. Unfortunately, that wasn't to be the case.
I mean, I think the kind of continuing on from Greg's original question, like this, Mauricio Pochettino ran out of a six defender lineup against City. And
if you call Dyer a defender, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was like every central defender we had plus Danny Rose. And we didn't get annihilated. And, you know, we had some good counterattacks. And, you know, if we had a little bit better finishing luck like we'd had in midweek, maybe we would have scored one or two of those. So, the fact that he got anything out of this team, and, you know, he introduced some of the players into the lineup and on the subs bench that I'm sure we'll come on to in a little bit. And we did all right.
Brian, do you think this game gives us any... I was expecting this to be a total throwaway, like I said, but do you think this gives us any sort of clue into how we're going to approach the Champions League ties, or at least how we're going to deal with this sort of fixture congestion we have for the rest of the season?
No, I think we have no idea on a day-to-day basis. I think it's really all dependent upon who is particularly healthy in the 2 or 3 days leading up to a given match, and then we just have to trust Pochettino to assemble something that resembles a working, you know, team. I would say just working midfield, because that seems to be the thinnest area, but, I mean, he also has to figure out which fullbacks aren't going to be horrible. He has to figure out an attack without Heung-min Son for the Ajax game, or, you know, or how to do something with Fernando Llorente for all the games. Like, there's so much that's just in flux over the next 4 or 5 matches that I don't think any particular match is going to give us a given clue.
Well, let's talk about
the thing that's like amazing to me is he has managed a squad that is like just devastated by injury, and, you know, still managing to build in some level of rotation to preserve the few players that we do have fit and maximize the squad's ability to get results when, you know, a team with Juan Foyth and Ben Davis as fullbacks and no real striker, like, it shouldn't work. But Pochettino has shown this season such a phenomenal knack for cobbling together a side out of this mash unit of a team that he has and put out something that can be competitive.
Well, even doing things that he hadn't been really doing before. Like, generally, if you're not in a position or have been rotated in the side a lot, he doesn't tend to give certain players a chance. And we'll talk about what I think you think I'm about to say in a second. But Juan Foyth is what I really want to focus on here. And that, have we ever seen Foyth play right back before? But he stuck him in this match, and I thought he did a respectable job.
Yeah, I mean, he was matched up against, like, Raheem Sterling, who is one of the players of the season, if not the player of the season, and, you know, gave him a tough match.
Is that Raheem Sterling, the player who had a 92nd minute winner against Tottenham in the Champions League quarterfinals, pulled back by VAR?
It's the very same.
what a crazy coincidence. I mean, Michael, do you see a future for Foyth? I mean, do you think we'll ever see this again, or is this just pure desperation?
I mean, it was, you know, like Danny Rose at central midfield, it was clearly an idea that had a concept behind it, and we've seen Danny sort of get like little bits of central midfield, but not pure central midfield since that time. Whereas Foyt, I thought, was like kind of fantastic. He had, I think, 7 out of 9 tackles and 3 out of 5 dribbles. Like, the thing that he's really good at, he's a really good aggressive defender, and his aggression can be ridiculous in the penalty area. He actually did have a moment in this game in the penalty area where he tackled Sterling in the penalty area and then, like, turned him rather than just, like, kicking the ball out of play like a normal defender is supposed to do. And it was, I mean, his self-belief is incredible. But I'm not sure that it's going to take a lot of precision to get him to actually be a good center back. Whereas as a right back, as a fullback, like, I can see how it would work. He's great one-on-one. And while he clearly didn't have any real handle on the attacking rhythms of when to break forward. He could be the kind of fullback who tucks into midfield. I can see it.
Well, I think everyone involved with Carlos Recaptain thinks he needs to be a midfielder eventually, but Foyth has stepped up in a way since that just forced run in the team at center back. I think it was late last year. He has just stepped up in a way that, I don't know, it seemed like he was on his way out of here, and now all of a sudden I mean, I don't know. I feel like if you told us that we're going to lose Toby in the offseason, we're not happy about that, but if you told us that Foyth's going to sort of step up in central defense, I don't know, like, I feel like we're all much more comfortable with it than we would have been.
I mean, I'm not comfortable with him replacing Toby because Toby is phenomenal and Foyth is a man who has swagger for days but is not necessarily the safe hands at the back that you need.
Much more swagger than anyone with that poor facial hair really ought to have, but kudos to Juan. He really pulls it off.
Yeah, you know, he's really maximizing what he's got to work with. I'll say that. He's maximizing his talent, much like his Argentinian comrade Pochettino. But yeah, I mean, I definitely don't want to see him as our starting center back next season in place of Toby Alderweireld. But I think, like Michael said, as a right back who maybe moves into midfield rather than overlaps down the flank, or maybe he can learn those tools, I don't know, or just a straight up defensive midfielder like we did with Eric Dyer one off season not too long ago. You know, I mean, he's clearly good enough to carve out some kind of role with this team. Just not necessarily sure center back is the place.
Well, okay, so I might have phrased that incorrectly, but I think, there, like you said, Ben, he is clearly able to hang at a level that I don't think any of us were thinking he could do at least as quickly, if at all, when the season started.
Yeah, that's fair.
But that's not what we all are here to talk about. We're not here to talk about Champions League semifinals. We're not here to talk about victories against Brighton. We're here to talk about Mauricio Pochettino being down with the thickness. Michael, how excited were you to see Vincent Janssen, our thick boy, back not only on the bench, but on the field for Tottenham Hotspur?
Yeah, I would rate my excitement as like 0.8 Eric Dyer's.
Oh, really? Okay.
Like, I don't think anyone enjoyed it as much as Eric Dyer did, but I was up there. And, like, because we were talking about the whole game, like, he was the only attacker on the bench. If we came to a situation where we needed a goal, he was going to play. And he did come in.
He did.
He came very close to getting a shot at one point, which was very exciting. He made a fantastic tackle. He made a couple of back passes. It was everything you could hope for and more.
The only thing he didn't do was
100% tackles, 100% passing. I mean, 100% win rate. The guy's unbelievable.
He's just a winner. That's the thing. Does it all show up in the statistics? No, but he wins.
He's grit. He's a grifter. He grinds. It's just what you want to see. The only thing he didn't do is stick his ass out in the box and just hold some dude off while someone ran onto it. But I'll take it. Michael, it's been a while since we've seen Janssen, and I think, like, it's been so long that we've talked ourselves into the fact that maybe he wasn't as bad as everyone says he is. He was virtually as bad as everyone says he is, right?
Basically, yes. He got better as the season went on. He was really awful in his starts, and better as a sub, and somewhat better in a two, which he tended to be in as a sub, and his overall numbers were just bad, not like god awful, as they were earlier in the season. So maybe there was something there. Maybe he was improving. Maybe it was just sub effects, which can be very, very large and like just completely you can mistake quality for sub effects. I don't know. Like, it's not completely impossible there was something there, but then he got buried and poachified and.
I mean, I think it's pretty clear that his exile had much more, at least a lot to do with off-the-field drama, as much as it did with his quality of play. I think he turned down some loans, and that was the end of him. But
yeah, he refused to go out on loan, he got fat, but now it is the dawn of the Renaissance. Because, I mean, look, we were... we skipped the part where we moved on from the City game to the Brighton game, but that Brighton game was a frustrating mess. And, you know, I think...
Oh, right. He did play in the Brighton game and not the City game. I'm sorry. I was just so excited to talk about Thick Vic that I totally jumped over it. Okay.
Yeah. I think just like his value as a mascot, you know, you could see the joy Eric Dyer had when he came on. And I think the whole team got quite a lift just seeing, you know, our thick boy getting a run out and making a nuisance of himself. And I think everyone felt, you know, if Big Chungus can come out here and run around, then we're not going to quit on this match either.
I mean, in fairness, he didn't have to do that much running.
Yeah, it's not like there was a burrito out there, Ben.
And I don't know. I think just seeing Vincent Janssen on the pitch gave Christian Eriksen the confidence and the swagger by proxy to take that shot from 25 yards out to win the game. And I don't think he does that without the inspiration of Vincent Janssen. He's like our Rudy. Only instead of being very small, he's very large.
So what you're saying is Christian loves his curvy striker?
Yes.
Brian, that Brighton game, it kind of sucked. Do you think that had more to do with, I don't know, Brighton's effectiveness, or Spurs are just completely gassed right now?
I'm going to put a lot of this on Brighton. They haven't scored in about 52 straight matches. And, I mean, they set up to not concede. You know, in the second half, especially after probably, like, I don't know, the first 5 minutes of the half, they were just defending with 11 men behind the ball. And they were defending very deep. And it was like, it was basically a back six at times. Like, it was, you know, the Brighton basically had four central defenders, and then you had Bissouma on the one side, and then the other guy on the other side, that were basically sort of wing backs nominally, but they were also then tucking in, and so it was literally like a flat six across the back, and they sat deep, and for whatever reason, we just decided that what we needed to do was have Danny Rose and other players just cross the ball into the box, and they mostly dealt with it. And then, you know, Christian Eriksen and Jan Vertonghen had some pot shots from deep, and we finally put one away. It was a little bit our continued difficulties with breaking down settled defense, and then also just Brighton being pretty organized and very, very negative.
We're very negative.
I don't know. I feel like I largely agree with that, but I also think we just looked, especially after the first few minutes, we just looked completely gassed. And I don't know. We did just play on, you know, we just had two really intense games. Maybe going against West Ham will be a little better rested, but I'm very worried about fatigue with this team right now. Ben, is this something that is keeping you up at night too?
Honestly, not really. I mean, the one player that I'm, like, really concerned about in terms of fatigue is Fernando Llorente, who can barely go for 90 minutes as is. You know, he can barely impress in a 30-minute cameo. And now we're playing him 90 minutes a week for the foreseeable future. And it's a lot. It's a lot to ask of this old, beautiful man. And, you know, our game plan against Brighton, it was, well, they have 11 men behind the ball. We aren't really going to break them down without an actual midfield. You know, so we're just trying to find Fernando Llorente. And the only way to find Fernando Llorente is with a cross to his head, because God knows he can't use his feet in tight spaces.
You could try to cross it onto his arm. That seems
perfect. His arm. That works too. His hip, his arm, whatever. And, like, you can just see his movement start off at non-existent and then gradually deplete as the game went on. And, you know, I'm hoping that West Ham and Ajax, you know, will be more proactive and more open so that we can get Fernando a little freer in these areas. But if we have to play more games like this, it will go badly because we're just not equipped to do that with the personnel at hand.
I mean, I think we will. I mean, we've got West Ham, Bournemouth, and Everton left in this year, and I feel like Bournemouth at a minimum are going to play this way. Maybe West Ham. I feel like we're going to see it again.
I think the one thing that's weird to me about our lineup in this game, though, is that I was surprised by how little we kind of rotated. You know, you would think, like, Brighton, you know, like I said, a team that hasn't scored in literally forever. And you still played, you know, your first-choice center-back pairing, still played both Eriksen and Ali. I understand playing Son because he's not going to play in midweek, but I would have then dropped one of Llorente or Lucas. You know, you could have maybe played Sanchez and Foyth as your center-backs. You could have, you know, given Oliver Skip a start. I mean, I understand that we're really depleted in terms of players that we might actually trust to play a game, but against a Brighton team that probably wasn't going to offer much in the way of an attack, this was probably a much better chance to rotate than we, you know, took advantage of.
Let's talk about rotation for a second. I mean, Michael, you look at this, you look at how we played this game. Ben said earlier we've been managing our squad well, but I think some of the rotation choices in this game were sort of informed by sort of how crucial it was within the context of our top four rivals. They all had big games. By the time this game rolled around, we knew if we won it, it would give us a huge advantage in locking in top four next year. Now that basically every team competing with us for a top four spot, or for third and fourth, has wet the bed since we made the semifinals of the Champions League, I mean, do you think we're more likely to see against West Ham, against Bournemouth, against Everton, do you think we're more likely to see guys like Skip, you know, some of the more fringe players of our squad actually get important minutes?
I don't know. I mean, I before this game, I was saying that Pochettino is just going to run Eriksen and Dele and Lucas and Jan and Toby into the ground. And either the top four race will be over and they can rest, or they're going to play every single game that they can. Sun will also play every single game that he can, but one game off. And after this game, I started to wonder if maybe that was extreme even for Pochettino, or if the trainers were going to come to him and say, they literally cannot run, you cannot play them. But I would still bet on all of the regulars playing all of the possible games.
So you don't think he's going to let off against West Ham this weekend?
No.
I mean, you don't think Eriksen's going to get her? I mean, Son's definitely playing because that dude's getting a rest next week anyway.
I think that Jan and Toby and Son and Eriksen and Dele are all starting.
Oh, I think one of those center backs is getting a rest.
Look,
I don't know which
one.
Let's
be honest. We cannot rest players against West Ham.
Yes, good point.
We cannot allow West Ham to have the satisfaction of being the first team to get a result in our new stadium.
That is a very, very good point.
Right, because West Ham fans are horrible and insufferable, and, you know, I'd rather lose to Bournemouth or whoever our other home game is. I think actually the other one's an away game. But I'd rather lose one of those games at home or lose to Ajax at home. Well, not Ajax, but, you know, I just don't want that first loss to be to, you know, a London rival or one of the other big top six teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of rotation, like, maybe we can get Davids and Sanchez in there for a game. Maybe.
I could see, I think Sanchez will start, but... Yeah, Jan probably will get the start too, I guess.
The big question for me is, because Fernando Llorente cannot play another game before Ajax, and we know he has to play against Ajax because Son is out, are we going to see Vincent Janssen starting against West Ham?
No. We're down with the thickness.
That's what I want to know.
We're down with the thickness. We're not that down with the thickness.
But if Llorente doesn't start, there are no other attackers. That means that we would have to start a less attacking lineup against West Ham.
I mean, we're just going to go with...
You could put Lucas and Son up top. I mean...
We'll just do Son and Lucas, yeah.
But we played Son and Lucas last time. I mean, it means we'd have to remove a striker and add a central midfielder or a defender or a fullback.
Yeah, so we go, we drop Lucas and Fernando to save them for the Ajax game, and we play Son and Jansen up top. We rotate Wanyama out for Dyer, and we go Dyer, Eriksen, Dele, and then we bring in Davinson Sanchez and play a back three and get Trippier and Rose, or probably Davis.
If we played Jansen against...
Or fourth and Davis and run the city lineup.
If we played Jansen against West Ham, would that be the most disrespectful thing we've ever done to West Ham?
To anybody.
I mean, other than sort of like sticking them with that shitty stadium, which might be more disrespectful than that. Like, God, that would be such a disrespectful move, which I kind of love it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question is, what is our lineup against Ajax, and how can we rest up some of the key players to maximize our ability to win against Ajax without Heung-Min Son?
I mean, I guess the question is, what part of what we don't know about that is, like, who's going to be healthy? Like, I think we all sort of think that Harry Winks has one game left in him this season, and we're going to try and squeeze it out of him at some point. So are you, like, playing him so you can rest some guys for Ajax, or are you going to save him for one of those Champions League matches? Is he even
I think if Winks is ready for Ajax, he'll play against Ajax.
Yeah, so, like, is Lamella health? Lamella seems to have been on the edge of health for a while now.
Lamella will never play.
Oh, man. I hope Lamella plays, doesn't play again until the Champions League final and scores the game winner. That would be great. Sissoko's probably not in the conversation until after next week. I mean, and if he is in the conversation, we're going to save him for the Champions League at this point, I think. I think so much of it depends on how fit is Dyer. Like, you know, I would imagine he sat this against Brighton as precaution. So my guess is he'll either be fit for this or the Ajax match. I guess we'll use him against the Ajax, but I have no idea.
I think the really complicated question is, how should we line up against Ajax? Because, like, this is a really good team that, in particular, is a fantastic pressing team and is extremely dangerous in the open field off of a turnover. And if we go out there to try to press and possess without our good players, I think we're screwed. And so I think that, like, Pochettino is basically, even though it's a home match, he's basically going to have to approach this almost like the closest thing I can think of is kind of like how we to think of two very successful matches of his, the match where we destroyed Liverpool, or the match at Real Madrid where we started Llorente up top in a 5-3-2.
You think we're going to see some sort of counterattacking air raid?
Not even air raid, though, because we can't play the air raid with Llorente up top.
Yeah, that's true.
It's going to have to be a pure, like, low block, long ball.
I don't think that's a bad idea. If Son's hurt, like, I don't think that's a bad idea. I mean, obviously, you know, you think so too because you're suggesting it. But you know what I mean. It's just like
Son's suspended, so he's out. It has to be Lucas and Red Day, basically.
Exactly. So we're gonna get like bargain basement Son out of Lucas, and yeah, I guess Lucas plays better out of a low block. I don't know. Ajax really scares me actually because they've beaten some very good teams.
I thought Lucas against Man City when we actually played the low block this weekend, it was one of his best games all year.
I mean, this is actually an example of like where Lucas is a nice little piece of depth. Obviously, he's kind of a fascist piece of shit, but you know, putting that aside, it's nice to have an attacker like this that you can pull out of your back pocket when everybody else is suspended or injured. I just wish he wasn't, you know, a fascist, but whatever. So yeah, I don't know.
It would be nice to have Eric Lamella.
It really would be nice. For a whole multitude of reasons, it would be very nice to have Eric Lamella.
Just another body who's capable of giving us something would ease a lot of headaches. And it's just unbelievable, again, just speaking back to how fantastic Pochettino has been this season. Like, this team is a goddamn mess. Like,
no, it's a mash unit. It is a mash unit. And that he has gotten us, not just in the semifinals of Champions League, but I think there's like, Michael, you talked a lot about like the tiers of teams in England this year. And I think it's very clearly like there's Liverpool and City on that level.
then there's Spurs, then there's, like, at least the way it's shaken out, then there's Arsenal, Chelsea, and United behind us. And it's just, I don't know, it's, some of it's luck, but he has really gotten way more out of this team than he had any right to this year.
Yeah, I mean, like overall performance-wise, like, we are just in that group, but that's because of the horrible injuries that we've had. Like, if Spurs ever were fit again, like, we might be maybe for the Champions League final, basically, is the only time that could possibly happen this season. Like, Spurs are clearly better than the next three. But we haven't been fit most of the season, so it's kind of been a moot point. And the reason we haven't been fit is heavily because of the horrible job of squad building that Daniel Levy did over the summer. So, like, I don't know. But the other big
thing
is happening.
You mean the supremely innovative method?
You're right. Hey, we're in the Champions League semifinal. Ball don't lie.
Mauricio Pochettino's had just such an incredibly good season.
Maybe so all the other teams should try not buying players. They should actually do it this summer when we try to buy all the players, and we'll see how it works out.
Michael, I saw you tweet that Pochettino is the only candidate for manager of the season. And I guess I don't, if you're just saying who, you know, overpunched his weight class, who performed the best with the least, it seems like that is a pretty good argument. I mean, is that your case for Pochettino, that just given the injuries and the failure to sign anybody, that even though Man City and Liverpool are both having historically good seasons, and even though we've seen teams like Wolves do phenomenally well for a promoted side, in spite of all of that, you're willing to say Pochettino is the man of the season?
Yeah, I think that the key for me is the amount of managing that Pochettino had to do. That, like, Pep and Klopp and Nuno all, like, set up a very good system. It was a smart system. It worked with the talent they had. And they have just sort of continued to do that, swapping in a few pieces, making a few tweaks. Pochettino has developed, like, three different things over the course of the season. Like, he had to make up the air raid. He has had to adapt to multiple different ways of playing without a midfield, and he's made it work each time.
He's been without the best striker in England for three extended stretches this year. You know, Dele's been hurt. I mean, obviously that's the reason he's had to develop these systems.
But we haven't had a midfield all season long.
Yeah.
Like, our best midfield is Harry Winks and Moussa Sissoko. That is the best case midfield we've put out all season.
He had to come up with a system that would deal with the fact that that the only way we could have a midfield was by playing someone who doesn't know how to pass the ball. And he came up with a system in which that person who can't pass the ball and was a midfielder was a good midfielder. That's crazy.
You know, guys, I think it's at this moment in time, it is worth taking a second to really, you know, really recognize our hero of the season, which is Ed Woodward. Just, you know, delightful move hiring Solskjaer on a long-term contract. Just, I personally really appreciate it. And, you know, there's just, you know, just thank you very much, Ed. I'm very appreciative of that. Because I think we were talking about this, I guess, I don't know where Ben and I were talking about this somewhere, but, like, how many managers in the world would you take over Pochettino right now? Like Guardiola and Klopp, maybe? Like, because if you had a bigger budget, you might want to take Pochettino over one of those guys, given what you've seen out of him. I don't know, but he is an extremely good manager, and we are really, really lucky to have him, and really, really lucky that clubs that might take him from us keep choosing not to.
Yeah, I mean, thank you to Zidane for trolling the shit out of Real Madrid by leaving them dead and buried and then, you know, magnanimously coming back to save them from their own fate, and keeping them from signing Mauricio Pochettino. Thank you to Pochettino for throwing a game against Manchester United so that they felt confident in signing Solskjaer to a long-term contract.
It's delightful. Thank you to Zidane for you know, coming back and demanding a big budget and maybe having to go get flashier players than Christian Eriksen. So, you know, that's something I'm going to wish cast into reality. Let's talk about that, actually, for a second. Eriksen scored a last-minute, extremely stupid winner. I don't know about you guys. If someone had scored a goal like that against us to win a game in, like, the 89th minute, I would be so, so angry. But I don't know. Like, Eriksen's great, and one thing that this might all be, like, bullshit in the media, and I'm just reading into it what I want to read into it. But, you know, there's some chatter out there that makes it seem like, not that he's going to stay at Spurs, but that it's just more of a realistic possibility than I think we'd all considered not too long ago. Brian, how would you rather take, like, a shitload of money for Eriksen and, like, I don't know, go buy a Lo Celso or a, you know, in Ndombele or, you know, get the next hot thing? Or would you give him, pay the man his money and keep him around?
Man, I mean, look, Eriksen's kind of had a weird season this year. I don't think he's maybe been as effective as he has in years past, but I think that's also been tied to our lack of a midfield and the other things that we've asked him to do at times.
And the World Cup, I think, to some extent.
Yeah, and probably a little bit of tiredness, lack of rotation. You know, I think I would prefer to not cash in on him. I prefer that we keep him because I just don't know that there are a lot of other players that, you know, can do what he does when he's at his peak. And, you know, I think he's more replaceable than Dele Alli is, but I still don't want to lose him. I mean, if you're going to tell me that the decision is Real Madrid is buying one of Alli or Eriksen, I would prefer that they take Eriksen because I feel like that's an easier loss to overcome. But I don't want to lose any of them, really.
Now, I don't entirely trust our ability to replace Eriksen, which is actually, for once, not an indictment of, you know, Spurs, our transfer policy or whatever. I just think, you know, Spurs sort of shot the moon when they got Eriksen, and, you know, we're talking about some very talented players, the kind of players that, you know, we should be targeting if we're going to lose Eriksen. But I just, you know, who knows if Lo Celso will be a success in the Premier League? Who knows if Ndombele will make that transition? I mean, look at Keita this year. I mean, it's not to say that Keita won't be a success or these guys won't be a success. It's just, fuck, Christian Eriksen's really good. The sentimental side of me would love to see him, like, play the rest of his career, or at least the rest of his meaningful career in a Spurs jersey. And, you know, I guess I'd just rather take the sure thing for a team like Spurs that can't, you know, just burn money to make up for their transfer mistakes in the way that, like, United or a City can.
I mean, the thing for me is, like, It's only a question about money. You know, how much money do we have to strengthen the squad already, and how much can we credibly get for Christian Eriksen? Because we didn't buy anybody. I don't know if you guys know this, but we didn't buy anybody this whole past year, just not one single player. So, you know, the fact that, you know, we need a guy like an Ndombele or Lo Celso or Jack Grealish or whoever the fuck, like, surely we have like £60 million to just drop down on a player before player sales. I mean, we have sold so many players and invested so cheaply over the years. And then again, went a whole year without buying anybody. I can't stress this enough. You know, there's got to be money for at least one big signing, irrespective of sales. And so if we can keep Eriksen and Toby, who's another one who's maybe on the fence about staying now, and not have to drop a bunch of money on a new center back and a guy to replace Eriksen, that hopefully also leaves us enough excess cash to reinforce the squad elsewhere. Like, I would be much more comfortable just saying, all right, what's the transfer kitty? Can we spend it on one big guy in midfield and then, you know, maybe sell our fullbacks and replace them with fullbacks within those means themselves? Yeah. And like you guys said, like, I just don't know that I trust that we can replace what Christian Eriksen does in this transfer window. And even if we're improving elsewhere, like, having a solid star midfielder like Ndombele could be, you know, for us, it's making the team maybe better overall if we had to replace one for one. But you know, I really think there's a way we can have our cake and eat it too.
Yeah, exactly, Ben, and you know.
But I mean, just to jump in here, the just to be clear, the case for not selling Ericsson is if we assume there's £60 million lying around to spend, then we're okay, and there might not be. And if there isn't, this is a really difficult decision because Tottenham, I mean, Greg was saying, we can't just ghost up money to solve problems. But one of the problems is keeping guys past their selling point. This is exactly what's happened to Arsenal. This is why Arsenal have Socrates, and they've had to play Lichtsteiner and Carl Jenkinson because all they could buy was Lichtsteiner. And this is why they end up with Bernd Leno at goalkeeper, because they didn't sell guys at the date they needed to sell them. They just kept giving them contracts, and the contracts got bigger as they got older. And that bloated the team up, and now they are really struggling to continue building. And they have a lot more revenue capacity than Tottenham do. Like, maybe there is enough money that we can survive it. Maybe if we sign Eriksen for one more year, we sell him a year after this. But we have to be moving on players. Or I mean, you can't do that at our level and not regularly move on players so you can get 50, 75 million for them.
So Toby this is the
gotten 40 or 50 for him, but we didn't.
This is the terrifying thing to me about,
or maybe leave forever.
But this is what terrifies me about, like, if you're in Spurs' situation, which is, and we've talked about all this to various extents before, but, like, Spurs are sniffing around a lot of players that teams with way more money than us are sniffing around. And the only way we get these players is the way we got a guy like Hugo Lloris, which is just all the dominoes sort of fell. No bigger teams were looking for a goalkeeper. Lyon was ready to sell. We didn't have anybody that we minded kicking to the curb for him. I mean, it all worked out. Christian Eriksen, like, had kind of a flat year, had 1 year left on his contract. Ajax was just ready to get what they could for him. We essentially got as good as we've gotten over the last few years, putting aside that we hired Pochettino, but we, like, just hit the jackpot on Dele Alli, Christian Eriksen, and then, like, Harry Kane turning the best striker in the world. And Spurs got extremely lucky that way. And I just, it's terrifying to think that, like, okay, now we're in this, like, sort of looking for this bracket of player that is, you know, I don't know if, like, you know, because you see what probably happened last year with, like, a Frankie de Jong, which is Spurs were sniffing around, and that if, you know, Barcelona wasn't already sniffing around, Ajax thinks to themselves, well, we could sell for a decent price to Spurs now, but we could probably get a lot more money from Barcelona if we hang out for a year, and if he doesn't take another step, like, Spurs will still be there. And it's just, I guess that's what's so terrifying to me. But you're right, Michael. We do have to, like, you know, do what we did with Kyle Walker to an extent. Like, cash in on some of these guys when we can and try and get more players.
I mean, I will say, like, I don't necessarily know that that's true. I mean, the last big star we cashed in on was Gareth Bale 8 years ago, you know. And the shakeup from doing that was painful, and it was did not pay immediate dividends. You know, it took a lot, and I think had we not gotten lucky with guys like Dele Alli and Harry Kane, just those signings that replaced Gareth Bale would not have done the job, would not have put us in the position that we're in today. You know, but the signings that we did do after that on the margins, which was add guys like Heung-Min Son, Lucas Moura, Toby Alderweireld, Victor Wanyama, Eric Dier, Dele Alli, you know, Kieran Trippier, these are guys that we didn't pay a ton of money for. We didn't have to sell a megastar to finance, you know, and these guys are the reason we're as good as we are, as much as, you know, the fact that we signed Christian Eriksen and Eric Lamela when we sold Gareth Bale. So, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily true that we have to make a big star sale to keep things going, you know.
Well, so then there's the flip side. There's the flip side of what Michael was saying.
Good recruitment, because we have to hit a lot on these guys more than we bust. And, you know, I think so far we have been fairly lucky with a lot of our signings. But, you know, we are also, you know, able to take guys like Paulinho and Chadli and Stambouli and turn them into money to buy a Heung-Min Son, you know. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, I'm hoping that we can still manage at a higher pay scale, you know, with, yes, transfers aren't $25 million for a big ticket player. They're $50, $60 million for a big-ticket player. But, you know, I think we have to have adjusted to that new marketplace.
I think we have. You know? I mean, they spent $40 million on Sanchez. I mean, that's not, you know... I think that demonstrates on some level we understand what the new marketplace looks like.
So it's not that we have to make a big, huge money sale to finance the team. It's that we have a team that's now full of peak age players, and we can't become a team that's full of post peak players. We have to move on from them, and we have to make sales where we get value. And the question is how, because we waited, like, waiting this long on Alderweireld has worked out for us, but we can't do that on every player. That's how you become Arsenal.
So let's talk about that, because I think one of the big problems that Arsenal has is, I mean, they signed Ozil. I think, amongst other problems, they signed Ozil, and they signed him to a massive contract that, you know, is just, I think it's handicapping them, amongst other things, but...
I don't agree.
You don't think that $500,000 a week or pound a week or whatever the hell it is deal, $300,000, whatever it is, isn't handicapping Arsenal? They purportedly just don't have money to spend in the transfer market right now.
I mean, the thing about Mesut Ozil is, like, he's still good, and he really hasn't played that much this season, not because he's bad or because his wages are too high, but because... he and Emery haven't gotten along, and he wants to leave. And, yeah, when you have a guy you saddle with this kind of contract who then decides he wants to leave, that's a problem. But in terms of, like, their buying problems, it's like they went out and signed guys like Henrik Mkhitaryan, Aubameyang, Socrates, like guys who are just on the older age of the age curve to begin with, and tied them to fat contracts, and then haven't shed marginal players like fucking Carl Jenkinson, who is somehow still on this team, or Nacho Monreal, who's still playing meaningful minutes on this team, or Laurent Koscielny, who barely plays and is still collecting wages on this team. Like,
they're getting rid of Ramsey before he gets to his post-peak year, so that's pretty smart of them.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, they let Ramsey walk for nothing, and obviously we shouldn't let Toby or Eriksen walk for nothing. If it's a choice between selling them or Ramseying them, like, yeah, fucking sell them. But, I mean, I think, you know, the guys we need to be talking about selling and cutting weight from is, like, Ben Davis, Kieran Trippier,
agree.
Serge Aurier, you know.
These turds, you just aren't good enough to be on a Champions League semifinal team, basically.
Right, and, like, you know, maybe that's not enough to finance what we're doing, and, you know, maybe we'll end up carrying Christian Eriksen's contract at 32 when he sucks shit and nobody wants him. But, I mean, I think... even then, the value he adds to your team in the intervening years might be worth it. And again, you know, a lot of my hesitancy about this is my concern about our ability to lock down these big target players after last summer, where we just categorically failed at every turn. And so selling Christian Eriksen and then just, you know, hoping that's not going to happen to us again scares me. And I know that's emotional and maybe not the most rational decision in terms of managing our squad turnover, but
not turning over our squad is what scares me. Like, this season was a miracle, and I don't want to have to deal with that ever again.
Well, it's you're getting to this point where we're going to have to see. I think we're at the final stages of Pochettino's Tottenham 1.0 right now, and we're going to have to see another iteration of it in the, I think, fairly near future, one way or another. Whether or not we keep guys like Eriksen and Toby, you know, there's gonna have to be some fairly substantial turnover in the squad. I hope what Ben's saying is right, which is let's get rid of these sort of turds on the fringe, and, you know, surely we could find better, at least comparable fullbacks for less money. And, you know, I don't know. Like, it's I hope that's what needs to happen, but I think you're gonna see a different Tottenham within the next year or two. There's going to be some more key players. Certainly our midfield just needs to look different. And hopefully we could do that this offseason.
So, I mean, I think that, like, the best guess is that we're looking at, like, you know, it's going to cost another $10 million over the transfer fee to replace Toby with someone similar to him, or we have to spend really big on a midfielder to protect a weaker back line.
But then we have to spend really big on a midfielder regardless. Don't you? I mean, we're not going into next season with this same midfield. I mean, we might, because who knows? But
Right.
The plan.
But like, I mean, but then you're, but I mean, like, if the quality of midfield that we're talking about, like, unless we just, I would love it if you're right about the money that's sitting around, but I would doubt it. I would bet that we're not going to have that much of a net spend this year. And if we don't, like, that money has to come from Ericsson, basically, unless, you know, I just don't see how it works.
Well, I mean, we agree that we were trying to sign somebody last summer for at least in the ballpark of £30 million over and above, you know, whatever else happened in the transfer market. You know, we had at least that much money at that time to sign someone, right? I mean, we weren't talking about buying some buying Jack Grealish and then selling to finance Jack Grealish.
I think we might have had more. I think there was a limit to what we were willing to spend on Grealish, but yeah,
right,
who knows? Who knows what the De Jong conversations look like?
I think it's indisputable that there was money there to buy that one target, and we failed on that target. And so rolling that money into this season, like, it's still there. Plus, you know, we've got a lot of fringe guys we can sell and, you know,
plus, we're getting 80 million euros from, at least 80 million euros from the Champions League.
Right, we got new Champions League money. We're already out earning what our expected match day revenues were at the new stadium. You know, like, I can't imagine there's not some base level of money. Again, our net spend over the last 10 years has been like $3, you know.
Right, which is why something. I think that our net spend next year is going to be like $3.
Yeah, I mean, it very well could. Like,
like, you might be right. I hope you're right. Your arguments are, like, reasonable, but I think it's also reasonable to think that might not happen.
Well, what if Daniel Levy just gets... What if we win the Champions League and Daniel Levy just gets really high and decides to just blow a bunch of money on Lo Celso and keep everyone at the same time? Like, I think we can all agree this is the best possible scenario.
Let's just do it and be legends.
Yes, let's just do it and be legends.
Well, what can I open up by saying? I think selling Eriksen depends on our current finances and how much we can get for him. And I will be okay selling him depending on how those numbers shake out. And, you know, yeah. Like, I do trust Daniel Levy to maximize profits on player sales. Like, that's one thing that he's done phenomenally well over time that nobody could argue with. And so if that's the case, that's the case.
Well, it's been so. All the rumors around Eriksen have been, you know, Real Madrid on the, like, at one point it was pretty hot and heavy, and then as their season has sort of continued to dip, it seems like they're just getting tied with guys like Pogba and other players. Would seemingly, you know, if they're going to be spending money on them, I don't think they're going to be spending money on us with Eriksen. So hopefully all his options dry up and he just decides to re-sign with us.
Yeah, I mean, the other reality is like, look, I mean, if we keeping Desk and adding to that platform of star talent is the only way we're going to take the jump to really compete at the top level. I mean, Man City and Liverpool are 20 points ahead of us in the league, and maybe we'd be closer without the injury problems and with just a deeper squad that we could do, buying on the margins. But if we want to actually be an elite team, like, we have to keep our stars and improve.
Okay.
And
but, Ben, I don't know what to do about City, but what if instead of buying a new player to combat Liverpool, we just buy a bunch of hair dryers and make the grass in England just dry everywhere? What if we just do that?
It's a weird way to go about it. But
yeah, yeah. Well, Klopp doesn't seem to like it.
Yeah, we get Parliament to pass a law banning sprinklers on soccer fields for climate change purposes.
And Liverpool just gets relegated right away.
Yeah. And then we buy Sadio Mane as he gets relegated.
This plan is foolproof. Brian, should
I mean,
we...
I also think... Sorry.
No, Brian, should we sell Eriksen? Yeah,
thank
let's...
God.
I thought you left. I thought you went to the airport.
Not yet. I mean, in like 5 minutes, but so let's wrap this up.
Me and Ben have to go around this like 40 more times.
We're back, baby!
Was there a question you wanted to ask me, Greg?
I was going to say, do you think we should sell Eriksen or not? But it's up to you.
I'm gonna
ask Brian about knots. Come on.
I'm pretty sure that I let's not go down that road. I know. I'm pretty sure that I started this by saying that I'd rather not. But yeah, I'm still going to stick with that. I'd rather not sell any of these guys. And then also all the things that you guys just said for the last 35 minutes.
Is that it? That's what we've been waiting for?
I mean, I don't know. I thought Greg was going to make me talk about something new and different. You guys talked that one to death.
Well, I will add, we're going to sell Dele Alli for like a world record fee in a couple of years. So that'll finance a squad refresh when everyone else is over the hill and past it. So it's fine.
I mean, PSG might be offloading a bunch of players this summer. Maybe we can sign a bunch of their non-Rabiot players.
Well, I'm convinced that if Dele can stay healthy next year, it's going to be his big breakout season. When he has been healthy this year, he has just looked like on another level. And I think he's just going to fucking kill it next year. And then Real Madrid is going to buy him from us for a gajillion dollars.
So, speaking of other players we could sell, I've seen people float the idea that Real Madrid should really be looking at Heung-Min Son, and that's who they should buy as their Ronaldo replacement.
You know, it's kind of nice that, you know, racism in football is obviously bad, but when you can kind of make it work for you, you know, I think it's good. For whatever reason, Son is just not linked with those teams, and I personally actually think it's racism as to why he is not talked about in that way. I think Son is... I think maybe if I'm trying to be a little more fair about it, I think him being on the same team as Harry Kane doesn't do his reputation any favors, but I think Son's great, and I think Madrid won't get him because A, he's Asian, and B, they see him as a complimentary player as opposed to a star, which is insane. I mean, Heung-Min Son is one of the best attackers in the world. He is world-class. He is incredible, and I don't know. I'm glad Real Madrid's a little bit racist.
But if we did lose either Eriksen or Son to Real Madrid, who would you rather lose?
Eriksen. Son's so good. And if Kane goes down, which happens a lot, I don't know if you guys have noticed, he just gives us...
We have Vincent Janssen, so...
Yeah, right. We got his fat ass. No, but I mean, Son is... He can sub in for Kane when Kane's hurt. He can play... He's dynamic with Kane. It's just... He's an amazing attacker, and I think as hard as Eriksen is to replace, I think Son might be even harder.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Wow, so you guys are racist against the Danish. I see how it is.
Exactly. Michael, who would you... if you had to make that choice, if you had to make Sophie's choice here, Ben's choice.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think I would tend towards selling Eriksen because they're both really terrible situations.
They are. I should be clear about that. But
I'm trying to figure out how Spurs should sell Eriksen and how they could make that work so it feels more manageable to me. But it's probably the case if I thought Son was leaving, I would have spent time thinking about it and intellectually preparing for it and imagining how it could work. So I don't know.
I just think, look at what Son does for us. I think trying to replace him would look a lot like buying Lucas, which is hoping some other guy takes a step with us. And, like, Lucas is like...
We'll just buy Anthony Martial. It's fine.
Yeah, that always works out for us.
He'll be happy to sell to us.
Well, we do know that he betrays commitments all the time, so, you know. Did he actually sign that deal with United this year?
I have no idea.
Yeah. I was reading somewhere he didn't, but I don't know if that was a joke or not.
Yeah. Like you said, not the guy to sign a long-term commitment. So.
Well, he will. He'll just apologize when he breaks it. All right. Now it's time to wrap it up. Brian, you've got an airport to get to. Let's start with you. Any final thoughts, Brian?
I don't know. I'm really just focused on the ski trip I'm about to go on. So,
like an actual ski trip or like a ski trip?
I don't understand.
Oh yeah,
it's a cocaine joke, Brian.
No, that can't be what it is.
Okay. Michael, any final thoughts?
No, I'm just sad that I didn't get to argue with Ben more.
Well, you know.
I mean, Greg and I can leave for a little bit. And
yeah, if you two need some privacy. For our Patreon subscribers, we'll have... We're just going to get them talking about, like, DSA politics on Veronica Mars and see how it goes.
For our Tim Sherwood level subscribers.
Ben, do you have any final thoughts?
I have no thoughts.
Okay.
Never had a thought.
Let's do one more around the horn. I should have thought this out better, but I didn't, so you're all listening to it, you do it twice. Ben, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs.
Brian, where can people find you on the tubes?
You can find me on LinkedIn at Brett Rainbow, where I am pushing my line of good for you and good for the environment, ready-made meal replacement drinks. And also, I have a line of face cleansers.
Michael, that's one to follow up, actually. Michael, where can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can also listen to me on the Double Pivot. And I'm selling... That was amazing.
I know, right? It was very good.
I had a lot of time to think while you guys were talking about Ericsson.
So you planned out this skincare regime grift in 20 minutes of Ericsson conversation?
He's from Florida. It just comes naturally to him.
Don't make judgments about how I utilize my time on this podcast.
And you can find me on Twitter at skipjack0079 and in real life hanging out with Brett Rainbow and the West Ham girl at Smithfields in New York City. On behalf of Michael, on behalf of Brian, on behalf of Ben, and of course, as always, on behalf of Brett Rainbow, I am your host, Greg. Thank you very much, and come on, you Spurs.